MacCast, Sunday, May 28th, 2017. Hey, MacGeeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for MacGeeks by MacGeeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MacCast. Well, got a great show for you today, and I really mean it this time. No, I mean it actually every week that I say. There's always good stuff to talk about when we're getting into Mac and Apple stuff, but this week is a little bit special because I have invited back my friends Victor Cahiao and David Sparks to do another one of what we call our Amigos episodes, or three Amigos episodes. Occasionally there might be four of us on here. Unfortunately, this time around, our friend Ken Ray couldn't make it along. And it's always fun to get a couple of extra voices in here and have a couple people to talk about a few things with. And this time around, we dug in a little bit into Apple and artificial intelligence and what they're doing in that area, a little bit on the Siri home speaker, talked a little bit about Worldwide Developer Conference and what we expect to see next week. That's coming up in just about a week from Monday. I'm recording this Sunday night, so by the time you hear this, it'll probably be less than a week until Worldwide Developer Conference. So talk about all of the predictions and the things that we're excited about and maybe that you're excited about as well. And then we wrap things up with things of the moment. So you get a couple of picks, not just from me, but from David and Victor as well. So it was a lot of fun to have those guys on, and I hope you really enjoy this episode. But before we get into it, I do want to take a quick moment and thank one of my show sponsors, and that is Atlassian and Bitbucket. Let's be honest, your code is your world. If you're a coder, you create it, you tweak it, you lovingly obsess over it every day. I mean, you're working on this stuff. I'm a coder, so I'm right in there. And picking the right repository management tool is really important because you want what's best for your code, right? And that's why the team at Atlassian created Bitbucket. Bitbucket is the Git solution for professional teams, helping over 5 million developers build with a purpose. Bitbucket gives teams of all sizes free private repositories with state-of-the-art features like the world's best pull request algorithm, built-in continuous delivery, and integrations with all your favorite tools like Docker, Amazon Web Services, and Azure. And because Bitbucket comes from Atlassian, it offers the best Jira integration available, giving your team everything you need to take your code from concept to customer. I use Bitbucket with a number of my projects, and what I love is the ability to keep the team organized and on track, keep everything secure. You know what's happening with different code that's being checked out. The branching system is awesome, and you can even get down and do branch level permissions. So if you want to lock down a certain branch to a certain part of your team, you have a bunch of different ways you can do that. You can control it with branch types, branch patterns, and it's just incredibly powerful. And I also loved the ease of setting things up and just the ability to integrate with Amazon Web Services, which for my project was kind of a key thing. We were using Amazon Web Services for everything, and the fact that we could set up all the deployment through Bitbucket and do it simply and easily, it was just awesome. It made the project much easier to work on. And Bitbucket is for the code that takes us to Mars, the stuff that decodes the human genome, or what drives your next car. And you can visit bitbucket.org/for the code to start your free account. And it's completely free for small teams of up to 5 people. You don't even need a credit card. So if you're looking for a great repository management system, check out Bitbucket. That's bitbucket.org/for the code. Try Bitbucket today. What will your code do? And a big thank you to Bitbucket and Atlassian for their support of the MacCast. As I said, it's a special episode of the MacCast today. We've got our three amigos with us, so let's just jump right in and talk with our friends Victor Cahiao and David Sparks. So here we are again, back for another three amigos, and I want to welcome to our little round table, Victor Cahiao. Victor, how you doing?
Great, Adam. Good to talk to you again.
And we also have with us David Sparks. Hey, David. How's
Hello,
it going?
Hello, Adam.
Hey, and unfortunately, Ken couldn't make this time around, but maybe next time. I was happy to at least get two of you in here. That's always the challenge of doing this. And people often ask me why we don't do them more frequently. And it's sort of like schedules and what people are up to is always a little bit challenging. And as a matter of fact, this time around, both of you were kind of had some changes going on. So I want to start talking about that just a little bit, just briefly, because I want to catch up with you guys, even personally, because I haven't personally talked to either of you in a few months. And Victor, I know you kind of went through a little move, right?
Yeah, quite a big move. My wife retired November and came to me and said, hey, how would you like to travel in an Airstream, you know, half of the year or more?
Oh,
like, sure.
You're living my dream, man.
And so we love national parks and all that. So we stepped right on the gas, bought an Airstream, bought a truck, sold both of our cars, put our house up for sale. The long and short of it is that as of April, we are now living in South Dakota part-time because it's very friendly to retired folks like us on a fixed income. And then the winter months, about October to about March, we're going to be traveling in the Airstream and living like nomads, camping, hiking, with me, of course, taking pictures of everything. So life for us, I pinch myself every morning because I'm just loving it. I miss the beach. I miss being close to you guys, but I'm loving our new little life here as retired folks, young retired folks.
Yeah, and speaking of like national parks and stuff, you're kind of right in a nice area to get to some very nice ones.
That was another reason. It's so central to so many things. You know, we are 4 hours away from, you know, well, about 6 hours from Yellowstone, but 4 hours from Custer, 4 hours from, you know, the motorcycle run out here. There's tons of lakes, fishing, hunting. It's just really central. And eventually we're going to head back east, and being in the middle of the country makes that easier as well. But that probably won't be for several years.
Yeah. And what I want to hear about at some point, and I'm sure you'll do this, is I want to hear all about being a digital nomad. I know a couple people who are doing that, and I know it can be fun and exciting, but also challenging.
Yes, it can, especially for a nerd like me who likes to have a lot of bandwidth and accessibility and being able to do something like this. I'm gathering information. There's a lot of people who have been doing it a lot longer, and I'm learning some tricks of the trade. And talk to me in about a year. We can do a little show about some of the tricks to get there and what the cost it's happening, because I'm sure it'll be different a year from now than today.
Yeah. And then, David, I saw you were traveling around. You did a Mac Power Users thing. I think you had kind of told me you were going to do that, but then I saw some photos, and you were off somewhere meeting with your fans.
Katie and
people.
I both speak every year at the American Bar Association, and they have like a show for nerds, a lawyer nerd show, where we were talking about how to use technology to be better lawyers. And since we were both in the same town, it was in Chicago, we said, hey, let's do a meetup. And it kind of blew up. It went really great. We had over 100 people there. We had a lot of food, and we had shirts and tons of great people meeting each other and making friends. We didn't actually do a show there. We just wanted to meet everybody. It was a true meetup. And that's why we called it the world tour, even though it was only one stop. But, you know, hypothetically, there's still time left this year. We may end up somewhere else.
That's cool. Didn't I see you get to Florida or something, too? No,
yeah,
did that
was
not happen?
Another thing. That wasn't related to the show, but I ended up in Florida, too. So it's been a crazy couple months of travel. But
I think you got to do the Harry Potter thing, and I got to do that a couple years ago, and I was like freaking out.
So good.
I was
so
freaking
good.
Out.
So good.
I haven't been to the one.
There's a chance I'll be in London next year, and if that comes to fruition, I'm going to do everything I can to do the actual tour of the studio or the they have the exterior shots. They have some place outside London you can go and visit. I'd like to do that.
Yeah, we're huge Harry Potter fans in my family, so it was like the thrill of a lifetime. And I haven't been. I mean, they have it at Universal here in California now, but we haven't been. I know it's not quite the same. But
yeah, my understanding is the one in Florida is much better.
Yeah, well, it's been there a couple of years.
If I'm not mistaken, David, didn't you also hit Hamilton?
When I was in Chicago, I was the weird guy who went alone to Hamilton, you know, creepy dude with the ticket, and had so much fun. That show's great.
I've got to go see that. Okay, I thought so.
All right, we digress. Awesome. Let's get into some Apple stuff, because that's really why we're all here, right? And I wanted to get your guys' take on a few things. Most specifically, I want to talk a little bit about Apple and all this AI stuff that's going on, because I don't know about you guys, but I'm kind of getting excited about like all the people they've been hiring, all the technologies we've been hearing about. Now we've been hearing most recently, Bloomberg has been saying Apple may build all of their AI technologies into an actual chip called the Apple Neural Engine. That they're going to start building into their products. And this seems like the next big step. I mean, one part of this, and I've talked about this a little bit on my show, is Apple has some AI technologies that are already built into the iPhone. They call it, I think they've referred to it as the Apple Brain, you know, this all the local stuff it does for like processing images. So the new Photos thing, which is one of my favorite new features in Photos, that I don't have to categorize my pictures. And I just was wondering, are you guys excited about this stuff as I am?
I am. I'm excited, and I'm also a little bit concerned for Apple. You know, yeah. I feel like they need to push this, and it definitely is something coming forward. We're in very early days. I mean, all of these digital assistants, I tried them all, you know, the Google One and Cortana and Siri, and they all are pretty rudimentary at this point.
What about Alexa? You
know. Oh, yeah, that too.
I'm a big Alexa guy.
You're a big Alexa guy, Victor?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I know a lot of people who are. My wife absolutely hates it. It actually almost got like thrown out of the house. It's been relegated to my office, and it's not allowed to come out of my office.
Wow.
Yeah, she was not. We received it as a gift around the holidays, just a Echo Dot, and it was kind of. There was a little bit of fun to be had with it at first, but then when it started just like going off all by itself for apparently no reason, yeah, it was not. People were not thrilled.
So is her animosity out of like the creepy factor?
Yeah,
or is it just very much so. It's just going off?
Well, that added to the creepy factor, right? So it comes with the creepy factor to begin with, right? Because it's always here you're putting a device into your house that is always listening, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so when it starts like responding when you haven't said what appears to be anything close to the keyword, and this has happened to me several times, we've even had it go off. It's in my office now, and I've had it go off when I'm completely in the other room, and you'll hear the voice come on and say, I'm sorry, I didn't understand what you said. And you're like, we're not even like in the same room, like what's going on? So I think that was part of it. And just for us, not a lot of utility. Like the only feature I think my wife really took to was sort of setting alarms, and Siri works perfectly fine for that. So maybe it's just we're not integrated enough in terms of some of these technologies. And it may be because we're Apple people, we're not really like Amazon people. Like I'm pretty all in, and I think I want to talk to you guys sort of in the second part of this a little bit about home automation and things like that. But I don't know how you guys are, but I'm pretty much going towards the HomeKit thing, and of course that doesn't really integrate with HomeKit too much.
Yeah, well, you know, we'll get to that. I think just back on your basic question about AI, I think it needs to happen, and you know, Apple's got this respect for user privacy that most of its competitors don't have. And I feel like that gives the competition some leverage. I mean, they have the ability to analyze a lot more data in ways Apple just won't do it.
Right.
And I feel like, well, how are they going to deal with this? I mean, at WWDC a few years ago, I was at a session. It wasn't a session. It was like a group. It was one of John Gruber's talk show things. And Craig Federighi was there, and he says, look, we don't need to see all your pictures of ducks to figure out what a duck looks like. We can buy pictures of ducks, and we can learn, you know, from that, which I think was good. I don't know if it was ducks or mountains. It was something like that. But but at the same time, there's a feedback loop in there. Like Google just announced at I/O a bunch of improvements for Google Photos that are very interesting for me, one of which is sharing, which we don't have yet with Apple Photos. But, you know, WWDC is in a few weeks, so I'm going to give Apple at least that long to figure it out. or make an announcement. But the but one of the things about Google Photos is it gets the feedback of the user searches. You know, it's great, like you were saying at the top of the segment, how on your phone it can search for pictures of dogs, and it does all that on the phone for you, and you don't have to worry about it. But if you search for a picture of stormtroopers and it doesn't find them, Apple never knows that you searched for a picture of stormtroopers. It doesn't know that people are looking for pictures of stormtroopers.
Right.
So they don't have the machine learning doesn't get to kick in and say, wow, a lot of people are asking for pictures of stormtroopers. Let's start indexing those.
Right.
You just don't get that feedback loop. And as AI becomes more of a thing, I do wonder how Apple is going to keep up with competition that is got a system that is not so privacy friendly and gives them a lot more data.
Sure.
Yeah. I want to tag on to what Dave's saying there, because I'm in total agreement with, and I love the reasoning that you're giving, David, is their privacy concerns. But because of that, quote unquote, they are falling behind. They may be way ahead. Who knows? But the reality today is that we've got items, Alexa, that we were just talking about is an example. And now Alexa Show, which just came out, or at least it's going to be pre-orders are available, now puts a visual element into Alexa that wasn't there before. I think in the last day or two, a new product called Echo Look Camera was just announced by Amazon, which is really takes this whole AI thing to a different level. Literally lets you speak that you want to take a picture of yourself, or take a video and turn around, and then they have a link into fashion by having the Alexa, you know, camera do something that is fashion related. They call it style check, and it lets you take your picture and get advice from fashion specialists, you know, around your outfits. And this is available today,
right?
You know, and so
and also tells Amazon all the kinds of outfits that you like, so that they can try and sell you more clothing.
Absolutely,
right?
Bingo. So they integrate into this business model, and it's just a matter of it's a fine line, and everybody I think personally has to decide where that line is. You know, for them, I think it's a very personal choice, and I think that all parties should be responsible in letting you decide where and where you do not want to send data. And I think this is where Apple is probably going to lead, because
right.
The other ones, like you said, microphones open. Now camera may be open, and it's on. The creepy factor for me and Alexa hasn't been so bad until a couple of days ago. Something did happen where I was having a conversation with my wife earlier in the day, and later on in the day, when I was watching Amazon video, there happened to be an ad for something that was very related. That was a little creepy, and it's the first time that I've had that kind of a creep factor, because clearly I had not engaged Alexa to search for something. It was simply an unrelated conversation that my wife and I had had in the morning.
Right. And that could, the problem with that, though, is that could have been just purely coincidental, right?
Correct.
But now you don't know. Now you're going, huh,
I had to really think about it. I had to think did I search for something after we had the discussion? You know, I don't know the answer to that. So again, it's just a matter of convenience factor of things like AI, facial recognition, voice recognition, the things that Apple is talking about integrating to a single chip, which are all good things. And where do we find that balance? It's the same balance, I think, that we've all had with security in our computers all along. And it's how we manage that. It is ours to manage that differentiates whether it's going to get abused or not. And we have to be aware, literally more aware than the machine, so it doesn't get the better of us. And as long as we're going in with our eyes open, I think we're probably be okay.
Well, yeah, but that's the problem. I don't think a lot of people have their eyes open on this.
Right.
And your choice of vendor is going to make a significant difference in what kind of privacy you have.
That's right.
And for Apple, just as an Apple nerd, I like Apple stuff. I'd like to keep using their products and services. And actually, I don't want to sound like an alarmist. I think Apple's going to climb this hill, but they've given themselves a higher degree of difficulty, because they're saying, we want to protect privacy. We also want to give you all the sexy AI stuff.
Right. And that's where I think this chip comes in, though. And that's sort of what excites me about the idea of this chip, because one place where I think Apple, at least on with having the restriction of, look, we're only going to do this stuff on the device, right? They're limited to a certain degree to what they can do without impacting other things like battery life. And so right now they use, I think, a combination of the GPU and the CPU. And the idea here would be, okay, now we can offload some of these specific processes to a dedicated piece of silicon that can only be for these kinds of actions. And right now, what it feels like to me is they're tapping into sort of silos of information that they have on my device. But where it seems to be falling short, and again, this is where with services like Google or Amazon, where it's offsite and they can kind of do it on the server side, they're able to make connections between things that then become very valuable in terms of creating a assistive assistant-like experience. And what I'm meaning by this is, like, my iPhone has access to, you know, my emails and all the data. And Apple does some creative things now with its AI on, you know, the Apple brain on the phone, where it can recognize a phone number that might be from somebody who's not in my contacts, but it's in my an email I received from that person, right? So that's when you get a phone call and the caller ID says, I think this might be so-and-so. And it's saying, I think, because it's used data from your email. But it seems to me like they're not making some of those cross connections right now with the AI. So it's kind of they're looking at very specific things. And my hope is that they'll start to be able to look at the data that is contained on my device about me to make a broader picture, and then use that of me and the kinds of things that I do, including like the places that I go to, when and where I'm at different places. Like, I'm okay if all that stuff, which is in my phone, is used by the system, not shared with Apple and processed on my phone, so that it can make really smart, sort of intuitive decisions about the kinds of things maybe that I might ask Siri. Like, what I might ask first thing in the morning could be very different than what I might ask, you know, in the evening or on a weekend versus a weekday, or even in a specific month. Like, I take kind of the same summer vacation around the same time every year, and things would change. And they have access to all that data. I think they've just never really been able to kind of tap into it and put those two things together. And that's where I think a lot of times you hear people say, oh, you know, Google's AI engine or what Amazon is doing, it feels smarter. And some of that is because it's more pervasive. It's more invasive into your data, and it's analyzing that stuff, and it can kind of leverage that on the server side. I think Apple to date hasn't been really good at doing that. This idea that I have is like silos. They kind of have silos of information they tap into, but one really doesn't sort of talk to the other, and they don't cross-pollinate, if that makes any sense.
No, it does. I think they have work to do, but I think we'll learn a lot in a couple weeks at WWDC how serious they're taking this.
Are you expecting... Sorry, go ahead, Victor.
And I think the next 12 months is going to be really critical to that path for them. So I think, Dave, you're right that we'll probably hear something. And then what happens in the next 12 months with this chip, with new devices that might incorporate it, is, you know, really going to be the tell story of how much they've been doing in the background that we have no idea about.
So, yeah. So, David, I think you're very, very correct. And I think this little event that's coming up in just a little over a week, I think it's a week from Monday, right? Apple kicks off WWDC or WWDC. And I'm expecting, I think, more and more out of this. I'm actually, frankly, surprised at how much we're hearing might be happening at WWDC, not just in terms of developer stuff, but even like hardware things. And just to kind of tie it into this AI stuff that we're talking about, the one rumor that I would be blown away, and I think Ming-Chi Kuo gives us about 50% chance of happening, is this Siri home speaker. So Apple actually trying to go head-to-head with a product against like the Amazon Alexa products and the Google Home. And it sounds like from our earlier conversation, you both feel, and correct me if I'm wrong, that this is a right space for Apple to move into.
Yeah, I just to back up a little bit, I feel like we've all been pretty frustrated with some of the delays at Apple. I mean, the Mac Pro is a good example, and some of the other stuff that's gone on the last few years. And I know you guys know people at the fruit company too, but I mean, I've talked to people that say, They had a huge couple of huge distractions the last few years. I mean, this whole thing with the car for a while. I mean, well, Apple's never announced it. It's public knowledge that they hired a ton of people from car companies, and they had, you know, facilities doing car companies. And all of a sudden, they laid off a bunch of those people, and the facilities got reduced significantly. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of, I'm not going to say common knowledge, but it seems very apparent that there was a big focus on that it no longer is there.
Mm-hmm.
And then they built this, you know, epic building, you know, that they've been working on.
You think that was a distraction?
Did you guys read the Wired article about it?
Yes.
I mean, they actually designed pizza boxes. So when you take your pizza back to your cubicle, I mean, I think this is a lot more than hiring contractors to build a building. I think the whole company was focused on making this epic building. And those two things, I think, are kind of off the table now, which opens them up, I would think, to focus more on the kind of stuff that we actually want to see coming out of the company.
Well,
I think that's one of the things driving all of our hope and optimism heading into this.
So since we're kind of down this path, I want to go down a little bit further, because this came up in a couple conversations I've been having over the past couple of weeks, the same thought about, specifically about the building, but you make a very valid point also about the whole car project thing. Now, the car project, as far as we know, isn't really killed. It's just sort of rejiggered, right? They actually have some vehicles out on the road right now, some Lexus SUVs, I think, that are testing a platform. And so who knows? So that's still a project, but severely scaled down from what we understand about it, right? So I'm with you where maybe that was a distraction and they're refocusing some people. But I've also heard a few people talk about, and same kind of thing, David, like people who would be in the know saying that the building was kind of this distraction too. And what I kind of think about that is like, why would Apple let that happen? Is it because they kind of feel like they were at a place financially? I mean, I understand the idea behind wanting to do it and create this space and all the cool things that are in there. But it seems like if they did let it get that far, why would they let it get so far that it was like even impacting the business to a certain degree? And maybe it isn't. Like, this is where I fall back on. So I'm gonna kind of answer my own question, but then I'll get you guys' take on it. You know, the stock hasn't been hurting. The company, you know, from a Wall Street perspective, doesn't seem to be hurting, other than they were taking a lot of hits in the media and even from analysts on Wall Street about, what are you guys doing? There's nothing going on. There's no new products and things like that. But at the end of the day, they didn't seem to take a financial hit for it. So I'm just wondering if they thought, you know, maybe if we were ever going to do these kinds of projects, this time was the time because we can kind of get away with it. Does that kind of make sense?
I think the reason Apple would get lost in making this building is because they're Apple. I mean, the people that work there, they think, well, they like to believe they're the best designers in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And you think they're going to go into a building that's going to, I remember reading an article about Johnny Ive where it was like a year ago, and he was really tired, and they said he was really busy. And one of the things he said he was doing was designing the panels for the elevators. You know, I mean, you think they're going to walk in and have a normal up and down and floor button in the elevators? No.
Right.
You know, Johnny Ive is going to spend 2 weeks designing it, and then they're going to go get it custom made. I mean, that's Apple, right? I mean, that's what we love about them, and that's what makes us crazy at the same time.
The other thing after reading the Verge article and the details in that was, at least my impression was, that part of that distraction is that building is like an homage to Steve Jobs and his vision, one of his last visions, and that he had some very specific ideas around materials, specific woods of specific years, and things like this. And so I think that there is this DNA part for Apple that building represents to them an incarnation of Steve Jobs, at least
legacy.
The DNA. Yeah. Yes, his legacy. And so I think that could easily be a distractor, especially for Johnny, for the executive team of the company. But I don't necessarily agree that means that there hasn't been some great things going on in the background that also in Apple fashion have just been secret.
Right.
Around AI specifically, although as the car is a great example, those seekers too tend to leak out. But I don't think they lost focus completely, but I think it was a huge distractor for all the right reasons. I think David, you put it so well that it's because it's Apple. Of course, right. They're going to do it that way.
Well, and I hope they're right that, you know, part of all of that little nuance and sort of attention to detail that went into that building, I think it's meant also to serve as an example to the employees of that provenance, of that history of Apple, of the demanding, you know, sort of attention to detail that Steve built within the company. And it's, mm-hmm. I think it's supposed to, the idea is like the building itself will act as an inspiration to the people who are working in it to say, this is the kind of achievement that we're going for in everything that we do. So I hope that works out. And so hopefully they're getting moved in, but we've got WWDC coming up. And I do want to talk about some of the things we're expecting to be announced there. Cause now I think you're right, David. I think if sort of the focus can go back on, you know, some of the products, and I hope in a lot of ways, the software too, which is a lot of about traditionally what Worldwide Developer Conference is about. So Siri home speaker, you know, I know, Victor, let's start with you, because you said you really like the Amazon. And I've heard this from a lot of people who are big time, you know, Apple people. They're not too thrilled with Siri, and they are doing everything on top of Amazon, including a lot of their home automation, which I think could be a problem for Apple if that's still a space they want to play in.
And I'm definitely in that camp. I do most of my home automation through Alexa, although Siri does help as well.
Right.
Most of my music listening at home is done through Alexa. And I am in that camp also, where to me, Siri has been somewhat of a disappointment in just its ability to understand me.
Right.
You know, and that delay thing that we all know about. I won't go into all those things. But they really frustrate me, and it makes me stop using it. When Google Assistant recently came out for the iPhone, instantly I started using it instead of Siri.
Right.
Because it just, for me, it works better. And I just need things to work. I don't need to have a fight with Siri about when she wants to talk to me or not. I did that when I was younger with my girlfriends.
Yeah. So one of these things is they're saying, though, is that, you know, this would be kind of a premium product, probably more in line with the $200 price tag of the Amazon the Alexa, the full speaker system, and it would be a speaker. It sounds like it's going to be like an amazing one, you know, like multiple, like 9 speakers or something in this, including tweeters and woofers and all that stuff. But beyond just the technology itself, I'm just kind of curious, you know, what would they have to do? I mean, if they just bring it in on par with Alexa or Google Home, is that enough, do you guys think? Or are they going to have to like really leapfrog?
You know, Apple, we've all seen it during our lifetimes where Apple is not the first to the party on some bit of technology, and they show up with something and they say, here's our take on how you do this. And we all look at it and say, how come nobody thought of that before? You
know? Yeah. And,
I mean, I guess the click wheel, the Mac, I mean, so many things they've done that way in their history. So I feel like, assuming this thing shows up next week, which is in no way guaranteed,
right.
But let's just say it does, we get to have that moment where we can hopefully stand back objectively and say, they did it again. They re-engineered something that we all took for granted, and they've thought of an entirely new way to do it, and it's super awesome, and we all can't wait to have it. Or they're just going to make a Me Too product, and it'll be kind of sad. So, I'm really curious to see what they do. Regardless, I would be interested because I'm so invested in iCloud. I mean, I can't get my calendar out of an Amazon Echo because it doesn't play nice mm-hmm. with the iCloud calendar. And there's things that, you know, I think would make sense for someone who's as into the iCloud system as I am to have the Apple one. But what I'd really like them to do is make something that's just super awesome and has a new take that none of us had thought before.
I'd love to see that, and love to see, you know, Phil Schiller have another not innovating my moment.
I don't think he's going to do that again. I don't think he's allowed to after what ultimately happened with that computer. Well,
that's right. True. Yeah. He sort of had to backtrack on that a little bit. Yeah. The one thing, I'll just leave this with the one thing, because I want to get to some of the other things that are expected to be announced. But the one thing that I think Apple could do really that would help them, I think, against the other products is open up more of Siri to developers. I know they have some things open there, but specifically if they're going to do a home automation product, I would really like to see them focus on the software side of it in a really big way in terms of adding new artificial intelligence technologies to Siri and talking a little bit more openly about some of those. And then two, more specifically, giving developers ways to tap into that system. I know like Amazon has their, they call them Amazon Skills. And I can tell you there, that's one place of the Echo. I personally like how open it is, but at the same time, a lot of the stuff that's in there, a lot of those skills to me are really garbageware. And I think Apple's really good at building a platform that developers can tap into that's open enough where they can build some really great things, but also controlled enough that you don't get the kind of just like free for all Wild West, you know, build any stupid little thing that you can kind of integration going on. And the Amazon feels a little bit like that to me in terms of their, you know, quote unquote apps and games and all the things that you can kind of tie into that. So,
and the other thing with the Amazon is you have to have very specific syntax,
right?
I don't know if you guys have played with it, but you've got to have the exact right magic words to unlock it. And this is another thing Federici talked about that talk show event last year, was they want to make it so Siri is smart enough that you can get in the ballpark and it'll still do what you want, which is, again, putting themselves on a higher difficulty level. And if they get it to work, it'll be great. And if they don't, we'll all continue to complain.
Yeah, that's the fear, right, is they put this out. And if they don't have these improvements, it could end up, you know, real bad for them in terms of the media and the press. But they always seem to trudge through it. So the other thing about WWDC this time around is that I think it seems like we're going to get potentially a lot of hardware. Like, we were supposed to have these iPads. The rumor was, you know, back in January or December, was we were going to have a spring announcement of some new iPads. That didn't happen. Now we're hearing maybe at the developer conference, you know, this 10.5-inch bezel-less iPad Pro. And I'm a little taken aback by this. It doesn't seem like that would be the forum where they would release this, but that's what we're hearing.
Well, don't you think they're still struggling with iPad? I mean, that's the one place they are getting beat up on Wall Street, is every quarter the iPad sales numbers are less than the prior year's quarter. And
right,
they're trying to find them. I mean, my feeling is that they're barking up the wrong tree trying to fix this problem with hardware. I feel strongly that the holdup on iPad is software, not hardware. But, you know, I guess, you know, that if they've got a low price 9.7 and then they make a 10.5-inch one that's about the same size, but they can charge more for, that helps them keep the profit, you know, percentage up.
Right. I'm curious on the software, what is the thing you think that's sort of, because I think I kind of agree with that, but I can never put my finger on what is the thing software-wise that I would add that would make the difference.
You got an hour?
what's your top one? Well, like, just pick one that it would be like, if it just this had this, is, this one thing that basic, would like.
This is the most basic one. It needs a finder. Or okay. It needs a way to manage more than one file at a time. If someone sends me an email with 7 attachments, I should be able to save them all to the same Dropbox folder with one interaction, not 7.
Yep. I would be in full agreement with that. And we saw a little bit of that this week with the folks at Readl. They did a great job of integrating. And of course, they're locked down, but they built a platform to integrate all of their apps together. So luckily for me, I use Documents and I use Spark Email, and I think I can do that sort of thing now, including in a drag and drop operation between a split window on my iPad Pro.
Yeah, but it needs to be system-wide.
System-wide, absolutely. Yeah, but yeah, that's, I mean, but to give someone an example, I think you're right, David, that is the kind of thing, you know, and whether it's a true full finder or something that's better optimized for a tablet experience, it doesn't matter, right? It just needs to be better.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't need to give you the same access. I mean, the finder on the Mac gives you, that's the thing, is you say it needs a finder, then everybody says, oh, we don't want that. This is an app iPad. Make it simple. You can make a simple finder. You don't need to have access to the, you know, system files. In fact, you wouldn't want it.
You know,
it would be a simplified finder, but it would be a finder or something like that.
You know what's funny to me is that, and I can't believe the iPad has never leveraged this little feature. And it would be great for like moving around, you know, a batch of attachments or something like that. But I don't know if either of you ever had a Newton, but I had a Newton. And they used to have this copy and paste method with the stylus. And the way it worked was you would highlight a block of text and you would tap on it, hold it there for a second, and then it would become draggable. And you would drag it, because the screen real estate was limited, you would drag it to the side of the screen. And it would just create this little tab on the side of the screen that you would leave there. And then you could navigate to another app. And then you could simply drag it back out into that app and drop it to move it around.
Yeah. Just last week, Federico Vitici over at Mac Stories did his hopes for iOS 11. And one of the things he asked for was a shelf.
Yeah. You know,
why not have a shelf on these iOS, on the iPad in particular? So you could drag up snippets of text. You could drag up files. And just imagine being in Dropbox and dragging, you know, dragging the 7 files up to the shelf and then opening an email and just pasting them into the email from the shelf.
And you could have multiple items, and you could probably have multiple shelves too that, you know, you could. Yeah.
Well, Federico's concept video was such a great example of, you know, another list of a dozen things that could probably easily or feasibly be done that just makes sense, you know. Yeah. And I think those are the kind of things probably, David, you could talk about an hour about. And I tend to agree.
I mean, they sell it as a laptop competitor. They say this should be your next PC. And you can't save more than one item at a time.
Yeah, right. There needs to be some more laptop-iness built into it if they want to try to continue to market it that way. I tend to agree. And
well, and I would say that it doesn't need to be laptop-iness. It needs to solve the same problems you have with laptops, but it could do it in a different way.
Well, that's what I mean by lap. It needs to have the sort of not necessarily the interface or the user experience of a laptop, but it has to take on some of the thought processes and roles that a current laptop
takes on. Yeah, functionality.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, so, iPad
sounds good.
Yeah, I'm a little less excited about, you know, a new size of an iPad Pro. I think this is part of the thing that the iPads suffer from. When I talk to people who have iPads, the problem is the iPad they have is already great, and they're just really not in the market for a new one, and just changing the form factor a little bit, or adding pencil support, or you know, making the screen a little bit better, or the processor a little bit faster, is just not enough to say, well, I'm going to dump this one that I've already invested quite a bit of money in and upgrade to the next thing. And I don't know that there's anything Apple can do to get past that, right?
You could solve that with software too. If suddenly the software was so powerful that you needed the latest and greatest to get all these power features.
Sure.
And that, you know, it could hopefully result in even more powerful software being developed to use these additional features. The software could drive sales of hardware, because people would say, well, you know, my old iPad 2 or my iPad Air can't do that fancy new split screen sharing thing that they do. Mm-hmm. Well, it's time for me to upgrade.
Yeah. What do you guys think about the potential rumor that we're not going to get any more mini updates and the mini might not be long for this world? The iPad mini, I mean.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me, but selfishly, I'm not a mini person, so I'm not really all that exercised about it either.
Yeah, I'm not a mini person either.
With that either. Nope.
Yeah, it's just when I brought this up, I did hear from a lot of mini fans out there, and luckily, I mean, the good news is it's not sounding like it's an instant death, you know, with this next generation. But just that, if you want a mini, you better buy the one that they have now, and maybe you want to stock up on them, because they probably won't update them at any point.
We have a lot of listeners that wrote in that said that they you know, one of the prime uses is it's a kid tablet, you know, they get it for their kids.
Yep.
And I don't really know why. I mean, who am I? I've never run a tech company, but it seems to me like they could easily enough upgrade the processor in it and not make it a pro product and keep it at a price that could be reasonable for people to buy it.
Well, Yeah, the point is they made the lower price 9.7 is now actually cheaper than the mini at this point. So that's another indication that the writing seems to be on the wall, that they're going to have this lower cost 9.7, and that'll be your entry, you know, sort of kid model. The one huge use case I heard with the mini that I thought was very valid, and I heard from a lot of people, is people who travel quite frequently. You know, Victor, maybe you would be in that camp at some point, like maybe having a mini, you know, in when you have small confined space and limited storage, just kind of becomes a big deal. Or for a lot of people, it's like, you know, I go on these world tour travel trips and I'm backpacking, and just having something small on the plane and something that I can throw in a bag is really great. And I get that. It's kind of this niche product. And I think that's, again, why you would hear Apple saying, well, this is kind of it. We'll keep it around as this niche product, but we're not going to really do much with it.
And you can see how as the phones get bigger and right. the 9.7 gets cheaper, it's getting squeezed.
It's getting squeezed. Yes. Absolutely.
Yes.
So go ahead.
No, I'm an iPhone 7 Plus user, and that is the main computer I use all the time. And then on the iPad world, I went from an iPad Pro, you know, back to a MacBook, because of the size and because of some of the things we talked about in software that aren't there. For the travel thing, Adam, that just was more handy for me. And so I made that decision, and I'm really glad I did, because I like having that that desktop form factor on the road and the MacBook. Although I didn't know a lot about it, I took the dive and I really like it.
Yeah. Yeah, the MacBook's sexy for sure. And speaking of that, that's the kind of last prediction we're hearing for WWDC, is that Apple may rev the MacBook Pros, I think, specifically. But we're hearing maybe even the MacBook and possibly even the MacBook Air, which was kind of surprising. Yeah, so that, I mean, I don't know if there's much to say there. I think the big thing there is that they would update the processor from the was it Skylake that they're at now to the more recent Kaby Lake, the Intel, I think, 7th generation chips, which that kind of feels like what they should have had in the first place, right?
Well, I think there's a problem with that. I don't think they were able to get them in sufficient quantity or hadn't been released.
It was a timing issue.
I don't think
issue.
That was like a malice move. We're just going to use the old processor. But the interesting thing for me is the idea of updating the MacBook Air. I mean, it doesn't have a Retina screen, but people still love them. They're the low price Mac, and I've kind of come full circle on this I've kind of switched on this, because at first I thought, well, why would you upgrade that computer? I mean, the idea is you're going to get away from the MacBook Air. But then I got thinking, well, you know what? If they have the ability to do that and put the newer chip in it, and people still want to buy a $999 Mac, and they're not willing to get the MacBook, you know, one down to that price, maybe they should just update it. Why not? You know, right. Put a new chip in it.
Mm-hmm. What were you saying, Victor?
Do you guys know if the Kaby Lake will enable the MacBook Pro to have 32 gigs of RAM again, which I know was a big complaint about the last version, including me complaining about that?
I've had a couple people tell me that it will, but I haven't like verified it.
Yeah, I've heard I've heard mixed reports on that. I'm not entirely certain.
You know, that would make me look at the newer MacBook Pro, where I haven't up to now. I have a 2015, and I'm sitting on that because I need that 32 gigs for the music stuff that I do.
Right. Yeah. I'm with David. I think I've heard a few people say yes, but I have not personally confirmed it. So I'd hate to go out on a limb and say yes to the people who are listening. Yeah. So, you know, and then I think we're expecting the usual stuff, right, also from what typically Worldwide Developer Conference is about, which is developers and APIs and operating systems and things like that. So we'll hopefully get some peeks at what Apple's planning for the next versions of the operating system. I really don't know what to expect at all. I have no idea what they would add to iOS or OS 10.
I would expect we get a lot more Siri calls. You know, last year, I think it was 5 categories of
right.
Siri interactions. Hopefully this year we see audio and some of the other stuff that we want to see Siri be able to do through third-party apps. I mean, wouldn't it be great if we could tell any podcast player to to play the MacCast.
Right.
And it would do it. And honestly, if we don't see the Siri in a can thing, but we see a bunch of Siri APIs, that's more smoke to the fire that we will get the Siri speaker thing.
Yeah.
I also have a feeling we're definitely going to see something on the campus, you know, some probably deeper dive into some of the campus stuff that's coming. I may be wrong, but I think it would be really interesting for that audience to see that firsthand.
That feels like an opener kind of thing. Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. Kind
of status updates as to what's going on at Apple.
I mean, yep. To me, the biggest thing about WWDC this year is I just feel like iOS 11 needs to address iPad productivity. I mean, we've already kind of touched on this, but
right.
It's so overdue. And, you know, the Mac operating system is pretty mature. Even the iPhone operating system is doing most of the things I want it to do. But the iPad has a million things wrong with it. I'm exaggerating, but it has a lot of problems if you really want to be able to use the iPad to get your work done.
Yeah, if you want it to be a true laptop replacement, it's.
Do you think with them buying the workflow team that's going to make some of that definitely come true?
There's no way we're going to see the workflow team this year. They just bought them, you know?
Okay.
It's Apple. My guess is, yeah, you know, I would hope that that we get something like workflow integrated into the operating system with APIs so everybody can use it.
Mm-hmm.
But they just bought those guys a few months ago.
It's a little early, maybe.
Yeah. I'm speaking at the Command D conference, by the way, on workflow.
Okay.
Oh, nice.
And one of the things they were saying is, well, should we address workflow? And the consensus was, yeah, even though it's been bought, it's still an important iOS automation tool. But
well, they just put out some significant improvements to it, right, in the last version. So
yeah, that's a good sign, I think.
It's a very good sign.
Yeah, it is.
All right. So we already kind of touched on this next topic before we get to some picks and things like that. But one last thing I just want to hit on, because I'm just curious, because, you know, I have some stuff at my house. But we were going to talk a little bit about home automation. I think we talked about, you know, Google and Amazon and Apple trying to play catch up and why not, all that kind of stuff. But I'm curious, it sounds like both of you guys are doing some home automation. What kind of gear do you guys have? I'm just curious on that level, and we'll just leave it at that. Like, personally for me, I have a couple of Insteon switches, and I've integrated my Nest thermostat via actually HomeBridge running on a Raspberry Pi, because it obviously doesn't have native support. But I'm in the process of considering dumping the Insteon stuff, and I've been really looking at trying to find solutions that are, one, HomeKit compatible, and two, hubless. And so, like, the iDevices stuff looks really interesting to me because it doesn't require a hub.
Well, I've gone in pretty hard and pretty deep to home automation.
Yeah.
I'm just looking, when you said it, I opened a folder on my iPhone that's got all my various home automation apps in it.
And right.
It kind of tells the sordid story. I started out with Wemos. I mm-hmm. still have two of those, but they're kind of like on their own little network. And that's my problem, is I have all these little islands of automation in my home.
But Belkin mm-hmm. just announced this week, actually, that's significant to bring up, that they're finally bringing a HomeKit hub. I don't know how backwards compatible it is. I haven't looked into it deeply yet, but I would imagine that's kind of exciting.
Finally. But I mean, the fact that it took them this long, I honestly would probably go with iDevices. If I was doing it today, I wouldn't buy Wemos, but
right.
I still use them. They're great. I have some IFTT recipes with those. Like, I put the Christmas lights on it, so it knows when it gets dark where I live, and it turns the Christmas lights on. Or, you know, I've got some various routines that they're particularly useful with the IFTT integration.
Mm-hmm.
I got a Nest thermostat, the very first generation, when we're still using it. We all love it. It's really great. I live in Southern California, so if we're out on a family event and driving home at 2 in the afternoon and we know our house is going to be 90 degrees when we get home, we can turn on the air conditioner from the car, and by the time we get home, the house is cool. I find that the Nest smart learning, this is another kind of AI thing where it's supposed to figure out when you're home and not home and figure mm-hmm. out your schedule. When you live in a house with four people, the AI is just not up to the task.
Yeah.
And what happens is it turns on when it shouldn't turn on, and it doesn't turn on when it should. And I yep. disabled as much of that as possible.
Yeah, that never worked quite right for me either.
Being a person now who's going to be away from home a lot, this is definitely a subject of interest to me. And like David, I have these little islands, and I wish there was a one solution to rule them all, and there isn't. So I've dealt with it. I've got some of the iHome plugs. I've got the Nest thermostats. I've got 6 Hue lights. I recently installed two quick set automation locks for my doors.
Ooh,
because
cool.
I want to have some work done during the winter when we're going to be away. And that lets me do things like set a specific code for the contractor to come in. And then I have a log of exactly when they came in and out of the house. And so things like that are great. Like David, I also do recipes that help me automate some of this stuff. In the winter, since we're going to be away again, Nest is going to be a critical part of that to make sure that the house is just warm enough, but not wasting energy. And then things like I stole a recipe from George where if it's going to be raining, there's one of my Hue lights turns blue. And, you know, it looks at the weather forecast, predicts rain in the next whatever hours, and it turns blue. So I stole that one from George Starcher.
We got a bunch of Hue lights in our house, and we started with some of the color ones. They're quite expensive, and they were fun to play with, but in reality, we never really used them much for the color features. And then they got real cheap to get the white ones, and they're like $15. And at one point, I had a coupon for Home Depot, and I had all these, I forget, is it incandescent, the old style light bulbs that use all the energy. I just went through the house and replaced them all with a bunch of Hues. So we can walk in any room in our house and turn the lights on. And we do that through, we have the HomeKit enabled bridge, and you just look at your watch and you push the button and say, turn bedroom on, and the bedroom lights come on, and it's great.
You know what,
so I'm long excited. As everybody remembers not to flip the switches off manually, which happens sometimes.
Yeah, that's the big problem, right? If you have the plug-in ones, it's like people are forced in. See, that was another no-go in my house. That's why I ended up with the in-wall switches. Was like, my wife's like, there's no way I'm going to use an app to turn on like the living room lamp. It's just not going to happen. Yeah. Right?
Well, this is where we go back to the Alexa conversation. You know, having these islands, great description, Dave. I've had Alexa has been, you know, the one device that can actually control all the devices from the different brands that I'm using. And I can say to it, you know, lock the front door, or I can say to it, you know, and I wish there were more integration between these vendors, or that one vendor, Apple, whoever, would just come out with a complete solution where I could buy my locks and my lights and, you know, my switches and, or at least if they could, the standards could talk better to each other. We've got standards that are just like kind of loosey-goosey, in my opinion, right now.
Right. Well, so the one thing I was going to bring up related to that is, one, I was going to ask you guys, for me, it's become really important just because I'm an Apple guy, and I'm sort of like, I'm deciding all my things, all my home automation stuff this point forward, I'm going to go all in, and I'm just going to insist that they all work with HomeKit. Because HomeKit does, if everything is HomeKit compatible, then it does all work through just the Home app, the one app that, you know, Apple has built. If it's not, though, if you start getting these mixed little islands, it's still just kind of a nightmare. So there's that. That's kind of one thing that I'm doing, and I don't know if you guys are in the same boat. It sounds like maybe not. But then the other thing I was going to throw out there, because, David, you mentioned, you know, just white lighting is kind of the preferred lighting, even though the color stuff is kind of cool and fun. It just, you know, it's accent-y kind of stuff, but and then just the cost of, like, I never jumped in on Philips because of the sort of the cost was a barrier to entry for me. I didn't want to do that. But this week, I think IKEA announced their lighting solution, and it actually kind of solves both these problems of the cost. It's relatively low cost compared to some of the other solutions. They only have white LED lighting, as far as I can tell, in the kit. But then the other part of it is it's fully compatible with everything. It's Google Home, it's Alexa, and it's HomeKit.
Yes.
So I'm kind of like super excited about that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it's on the way. And our electric bill did go down it was noticeable that we were spending a lot of energy on the old-fashioned lights that we had.
Agreed.
I feel like this is just like we're in this period of the stuff is now exists, but it's not all exactly figured out and fully baked. Mm-hmm. I've been testing lately because we have an Amazon Echo, but we also have Siri. And I've been lately testing just how long does it take me to give the commands to have the Echo to turn the lights on, and how long does it take to turn the lights on versus doing it through Siri. And I don't want to say how the commands out because I don't want to turn everybody else's lights off, that's listening to the show. But I can tell you that in my case, Siri is noticeably faster. And I've got to the point now that using the Apple Watch, I turn the lights on and off walking through the house pretty fast with Siri. Yeah.
That's nice.
And that's a good sign. But I mean, I think there's more room here to grow and things to do. And like Adam, if I had my druthers and I was starting from scratch, I think I would just be buying HomeKit stuff because I'm not leaving the Apple hardware anytime soon.
Right.
I think it makes sense. Yeah. I also like, again, the Apple HomeKit has a security layer to it. That's the reason why a lot of the stuff has trouble dealing with HomeKit is because they are taking security important. And I don't want some hacker turning off my lights or whatever. One of the things I didn't mention that is another island in my house is I've got some of these Canary cameras.
Right. You know?
And they don't work with HomeKit. I guess they're coming out with one that does. Maybe they've announced it already. I don't know. But the... but it's okay. I mean, we've got a pretty good security system. When we're away from the house, we get a notification if something's going on in the house, and we get video of it right away. But I'd love to see that integrated with HomeKit.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of my favorite automation things that I didn't talk about is I have a automated humidifier checker for my humidor. I have a huge coolador, and I can at any time, anywhere in the world, check the humidity level in my humidor at the current moment. I love that. And if I could just figure out a way to, you know, automatically add or reduce humidity from it, that would be great. But I think that would be a little more expensive to get into some of that hardware.
That's an investment.
So Victor has confirmed that he's both a nerd and a Cuban today.
I am proudly to say that I'm both of those. You bet.
All right. I think we're going to finish up here. I want to finish up with what I call on the MacCast my thing of the moment, or in this case, it likes to be our things of the moment. So I asked each of you to come up with a pick. Hopefully you've got something. You each have something. I should have asked you at the beginning of the show before we started recording. You good to go?
Yes.
Okay. We'll start with you, Victor.
Sure. You know, I'm always on the lookout for a new photo editor and new ways to process photos. Recently, I downloaded the free version of Topaz Lab Studio. Mm-hmm. It's a super fast, one-click solution to a lot of workflows that in Lightroom, it might take you a lot more time to learn, or you're paying that $9.95 a month. So they've done, like I said, a bunch of presets that are very cool. You can work. Basically, you do have to sign up, but the software itself is free, and you get a bunch of effects built in, baked in with just having signed up for the product. So in that way alone, just if you did nothing else, to me, I think it's a very cool product if you have been looking to play around with a new editor or be creative, because sometimes when I use a new editor, I find new creative methods that, because I'm used to using the old one, I don't do. And if you want to add more, they do have additional plugins. I think right now they're having like a 50% off sale for some of their more advanced plugins. Again, so this is their answer to the Adobe Online model. What's nice about it, it's, you know, always up to date. They know exactly which plugins you bought. And so when you log in, you know, like in the world of Adobe, it's all right there waiting for you. But if nothing else, if you just take the free software and explore that as a new way to approach your photos, maybe different from Photos or from Lightroom, that alone, to me, is what I've been playing with and getting some pretty good results.
Very cool. Very cool. So check that out. And David, what do you got?
I just got a new toy in the mail that I ordered like months ago. It's a Studio Neat Glyph, the most recent Glyph, which is a company that makes tripod mounts for your smartphones.
Yep.
And the newest version is awesome. You know, they it's like every iteration of this gets better, but this one, I don't know how they're going to improve upon it, because it's ratcheted. It's like a little hook that goes around your phone. It holds it on the top and the bottom. It's super secure, and it's got a little lever you press down, so the thing can telescope out with a spring. It's got spring loaded, so it'll just like kind of pull itself in around the size of your phone. if you've got the biggest iPhone with a case on it or the smallest iPhone without a case, doesn't matter. It'll fit around any one of them. If you're crazy enough not to have an iPhone, whatever device you're carrying, it'll fit around it.
You don't have to have the tool, because that's the problem with the version I have, is you have to have the Allen wrench.
Yeah, you had to screw it to get the, and then once you got the size fit, that was it. Like if you took your phone out of the case, then suddenly it didn't work anymore.
Right.
This one, you can change on the fly, and then you just press down that little ratchet or the little lever, and it locks it in. It's super great. I bought the whole kit. I got the one with the new glyph plus the wooden handle and the wrist strap, because I just thought I'd be crazy and get the whole thing. And I was just walking around Disneyland with it a couple days ago and taking some great video. It's nice. It's just a really nice thing. It has, I think, three different mounting points, tripod mounting points. So no matter how you're going to mount it on a tripod, you're good. And if you're looking to put your iPhone in a tripod, I recommend this product.
Very cool.
Just
I like my glyph. I use it quite frequently. It's a handy little thing to have around.
Yeah, and it fits in your pocket. Like my whole... And I'm just the opposite of Victor when it comes to photography. My whole idea is I want to take good pictures, but I want everything to fit in my jeans pocket, you know? But with as good of camera systems you have in the iPhone, or if you add a DXO1 to it and you get a glyph and a small tripod, you can take some really impressive pictures without a lot of gear.
Very cool. All right. My pick is actually going to be an app. And also, I guess it's a website and a service. I don't know if you guys are probably like me. I've got a bunch of like old stuff lying around, like old gear. Like I have an Apple TV Series 2 and Series 3 that I don't use. And I've got an Insteon hub and a bunch of stuff that I used to use but upgraded and replaced. And I never know what to do with this stuff. And I always think, you know, oh, we'll have a garage sale at some point and I'll sell it all. And that never seems to happen. So I know there's like Craigslist and eBay. I'm not a huge fan of either of these things. So I was kind of wondering about selling stuff. And I found a website and service. Now, I have to say, I haven't used it yet in terms of buying something. But I've browsed around with it. And I think I'm actually going to list a couple things on here and see how it goes. It's a site called Let Go. And there's also an app. And what it kind of feels like is a little bit like Pinterest and Craigslist sort of got together and created a site where you can like buy and sell stuff. So you go on there, and I think the idea is it's for like quick sales. It's just like you find something, you can take a couple pictures with your cell phone, you can post it right there, and it's geolocated. And so you can find stuff within a close range to where you are that people are selling or buying, and you can search for it. And there's a messaging component built in, so you can directly message the seller and ask questions about the condition. Is it still available? Negotiate on price. And then once you do that, you just agree, you know, like you would with Craigslist or anything else, to meet up in a public location, do the exchange. And I can't tell, what I can't figure out yet, and I haven't figured out yet, is if they handle the actual transaction side of things. I don't think that they do, although that might be a nice feature if they don't. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. I haven't seen that. I haven't gotten that far with it. But I have tried it. You know, there was an item I was kind of interested in, and I asked somebody a question about it, and I got like an immediate text back, you know, so they get a notification and they were able to answer my questions about it and stuff like that. So it looks like it's going to be a pretty neat app, and I'm going to give it a try. And I didn't know if anybody else had run across this service, but it's called Let Go. The app is Let Go. I think the website is, just letgo.com. So buy and sell your old junk.
Very cool.
So that's it. I think that's going to wrap it up for this Amigos edition. Real quickly, if you guys want to just say what you're up to, where people can follow you, we'll start with you, David. What's going on these days? Where can people check out what you got going on?
My home on the internet is MacSparky.com. That's where I write, and it's got links to all my podcasts. The two podcasts that I do is the Mac Power Users with Katie Floyd over at relay.fm/MPU, and I do Free Agents with Jason Snell, where we talk about being independent workers, and that's also at relay.fm/freeagents.
Oh, very cool. I'm going to have to check that out. I haven't yet. I know you told me about it, that you guys were starting that up or doing that.
Yeah,
I have not.
It's going really good. Big audience and everybody's happy and it's a good show. Check it out.
Excellent. Yeah, because I'm a free agent. And you, Victor, are you, what do you got going on these days? I know you've been through this like big move, so.
Yeah, right now I really don't have anything in the podcasting world, but you can follow me on Facebook, Victor Cajiao, or Twitter. And I'm definitely posting things about our adventures here in the Midwest. And as our travels happen, there'll definitely be pictures and probably some funny stories about things that I've done wrong in the world of RV.
Do you have one place where you kind of post your photography, or tend to post photography, or is it just mostly?
Really, Facebook is the place. I've been doing most of my shooting with the iPhone. So there it is, David, well, talking
Victor
about
Victor has a great pocket. Eye. You post great photos, so people should definitely check those out. I will vouch for you. It's some amazing stuff that I've seen from you, and I can only imagine as you get to some of the great parks across the United States, it's going to get even better.
It's going to be fun. I'll be shooting with whatever I have in hand, and that'll run the gamut. So do follow me if you're interested in some of that, or just hearing me geek out about other things.
Yeah, I feel like the biggest benefit of Victor doing this whole thing, turning his life upside down, is the awesome pictures all of us get to see. Because
yeah,
a really good photographer is now going to be visiting a lot of places. So I cannot wait for that feed.
Yeah. Going to be very, very cool. Well, thanks guys for hanging out. That's going to do it, I guess. So we'll talk to everybody else later. Hey, there you go. That is the Three Amigos show. I hope you enjoyed that. I certainly had a great time hanging out with David and Victor. It's always fun, as I said, to get them on the show, and hopefully we'll have them back a little sooner than we did this time around. But that is going to do it for now. Before I leave you, I do want to take a moment and thank one of my show sponsors, and that is Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, Disc Label, also Text Expander for iPhone and iPad, along with PDF Pen for iOS and PDF Pen Scan Plus. You can check out all of their great applications, get more information and details on the stuff that they make over at smilesoftware.com/MacCast. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at cacheFly.com. And all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. They are at backbeatmedia.com. As always, I love hearing from you. If you have a comment on this episode or anything else, any other episode, you're welcome to send me emails, audio comments, questions. If you have a topic you'd like me to cover on a future episode of the MacCast, let me know about it. Shoot your emails, your audio comments to maccast@gmail.com, or you can call in on the listener hotline and leave a voicemail. That number, 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IAM-9. If you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you'll find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And while you're there, be sure to check out the forum at forum.maccast.com. And if you'd like to follow me on social media, you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast. You can check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast. Or you can check out the MacCast Google Plus community. You'll find that at google.com/plusMacCast. But that'll do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.